My name's Melanie. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my dear friend Rhonda for asking me to come and share. I was so, I mean, I get up really early anyway, but I was so glad to actually have a reason to be dressed and have makeup on by 6:20. Like I was like, wow, I've got a head start already. So thanks for helping me get there, Rhonda. My sobriety date is June 10th of 1992. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor girls and they sponsor girls. And my home group is the Kester reunion meeting on Monday nights at 7 o'clock on Zoom. So I'm so glad to be here. I love this meeting and glad to see Julie here and some other people that I've seen before. So I guess I'm just gonna tell you, get my experience, strength, and hope, kind of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I will tell you what it's like now, briefly. I've been married. I've been with my husband for over 8 years. I'm talking kind of softly because he had food poisoning and he's really sick. So in the next room, and hopefully he's doing better. I have a good relationship with my husband. I have a home that's clean. I have a car that doesn't have a whole lot of dents in it, no dents in it. All my bills are paid. I'm employable. And I don't have that stuff because I'm sober. I have that stuff because I can show up to work on a daily basis because I'm sober and because I know how to be most of the time a worker among workers and a friend among friends. So I'm able to hold a job long enough to, pay my bills and be self-supporting, and that's really, really important to me. So that's kind of why I mentioned that. I haven't been in the psychiatric ward my whole sobriety. I have not mutilated myself. I have, all those things that seem like they're problems other than alcoholism have not been happening because when I was, I learned in my, I didn't even realize what alcoholism was until I was maybe 4 years sober. I didn't understand that the problem centered in my mind. And, when I took away a drink or a drug, I actually got worse because, the drinking isn't the problem. It's the staying sober and living life on life's terms. That's the problem. And for so long, alcohol was my solution. And I didn't realize it was my solution. I just know that I felt better when I drank. And that was just what I was going to do. And I didn't know that I didn't have any choice in it. And welcome to the newcomers and, anybody that's, Daniel, second day. I mean, I couldn't, it took me weeks before I could raise my hand as a newcomer. And I was so embarrassed. It was like I stayed sober on that alone because I just didn't want to ever have to stand up as a newcomer again. So I took my first drink when I was 14 years old. It was my first drink to kind of get drunk, but I always forget that I actually remember the effects of alcohol as young as 11 when we were taking communion at the Episcopal Church. And I remember at some point, I always hated the taste of wine, but I remember at some point taking that sip of wine and it affecting me. And I remember saying to one of the other kids, like jokingly, but not jokingly, let's go find the wine and try to, and I felt warm and fuzzy. And after that, I had refused alcohol. I was a serious ballet student. I was serious about getting grades. I was just very serious to begin with. I just didn't want to get in any trouble, but for some reason, I always was getting into trouble. And so when I took my first drink, at 14 years old, I was with my friend who was a latchkey kid. Her mom was always working and dating, and there was nobody around. We drank together, and I don't know how drunk I got, but I just remember feeling better right away and not worrying about my weight for dance class and just feeling like I wanted to do that every single weekend for the rest of my life. And I immediately had a way of life. I immediately had friends. I was comfortable around boys. I was comfortable laughing. And, I had that sort of sense of ease and comfort that only an alcoholic who has this particular reaction to alcohol will understand. And, I didn't have any problems right away. I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I identified with the saying that my drinking was correct, characterized by by fun, and then fun with problems, and then problems with fun, and then just problems. And it stopped, being fun at the end. And I got sober when I was 24 years old, and I stopped trying to drink when I by the time I was 21. So I didn't drink for very long. Some of the problems that started happening within the first few years was were that I stopped going to dance class. I started getting really bad grades. I started getting in more trouble. Immediately, I found a boyfriend that was somebody else's, and it didn't matter that it was somebody else's boyfriend. I just thought that, well, of course, he's with me. I'm cooler. And I wasn't. I was just drunk and loaded also. So, and I did drugs too. Just it was easier to get when you're in high school, in junior high, it's easier to get drugs than it is to get alcohol. But I drank every chance I could, and I tried to control my drinking with drugs, and it just never did the same thing. So, by the time I was, by the time I was 16 or 17, I was getting in a lot of trouble. I got arrested, thrown in the drunk tank. I ran away from home, but this was like on the Central Coast in a small town, so running away from home isn't as badass as it would be like in Los Angeles. I kind of lived on the beach and stayed with friends until the cops caught me. And my drinking took a turn for the worse in when I was assaulted when I was 18 years old, and I didn't really understand what had happened to me, but I needed something to I needed something to fix me, and I knew I needed something to fix me. I knew I needed something to not feel, and I started putting anything I could into my, I just started drinking and using as much as I could. And, at 20 years old, I remember feeling like I had three options of what I could do on a Tuesday night, and that is I could drink, I could get loaded, or I could binge and purge. And those were the three options that I had at 20 years old. And I didn't know that I had, and I'd tr been trying to control my drinking by that time. I had, thought at, at various times that I'm just going to stop. I'm just going to stop. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to not, I'm going to eat well. I'm just going to get it together. And that would last 2 weeks, and that itchy feeling would come over me, and all of a sudden my mind would change, and I would be like, I can stop. It's beach time. I can stop. I can chop tomorrow. And I didn't understand until I was in my fourth year of sobriety that that is what powerlessness over alcohol is. The fact that I have the total inability to keep my decision to not drink. I will change my mind because I'm completely powerless within my mind over alcohol. It doesn't matter if I'm drinking or not drinking, if I'm sober, I will change my mind and drink again. And I used to think that I was just changing my mind. So, by the time I was 21, I was institutionalized by for the second time because I, thought I was gonna kill myself. And I had been hurting myself and burning myself with cigarettes. I'd been doing things that I was sorry for. I really identified when, I heard Rhonda share in the past that, I was the sorriest woman anybody would meet, and I was the sorriest woman that anybody would meet. And I was just so sorry, and I felt so bad, and I was cheating on my boyfriend, and I didn't know how I got there. I didn't know how to make my bed. I didn't know how to put money in the parking meter. I didn't know how to hold on to a job. I was always getting fired from jobs, not because I was a bad, not because I didn't know how to do the job, but because I couldn't get along with other people. And it was just like, and I was 21 years old. Like I was 21. I was trying to stop drinking, and so I ended up in this, by the time I was 24, I ended up in the psychiatric ward because I thought I was going to lose control of my limbs and kill myself because I didn't know how to stop myself from doing anything else. And so I was afraid that I was just going to not be able to stop myself from killing myself. And in the psychiatric ward, they told me that, 50% of my problems would go away if I just stopped drinking and using. And that sounded like, oh my God, that sounded like that would be the answer. But I, was in there and I got out, and, within a day, my boyfriend is blowing pot smoke in my face, and I'm not counting it as a relapse because it's a contact high. So all of these justifications. And you know, by the time I got sober, what happened was I had been trying to go to church to control my drinking, and in that fundamentalist Christian church, they told me that you couldn't live with your boyfriend because it was a sin. And so I was technically living with my mom, but really living with my boyfriend. And my mom had told me that I wasn't welcome around the house if I was drinking. And I was drinking and lying to her about it, and my sister told on me. And my sister, who has decades in our sister program, Al-Anon, I've only just started remembering to acknowledge her about this, but I think she saved my life because she told my mom, and my mom wrote me a letter saying, "You're no longer welcome around the house anymore, because you don't want to stop drinking and you don't want to go to AA, and I don't want to watch you die." And my mother is certifiable. You know, her best friend at that point was the young man who was my age next door, who had just gotten out of the psychiatric ward for schizophrenia, and that was her best friend, and I was buying her drugs. So for my mom to tell me something like that, it got my attention, and I thought, God, if my mom thinks I'm that bad, I must really be bad. And I called a rehab in Santa Barbara because my hometown was not nice enough for me to get sober. So I called Santa Barbara, and the hospital there said, "Oh, we can get you in." This was a Monday night, and they said, "We can get you there on Wednesday." And I paused for a second because that was only 2 days away, and it seemed really soon. And for some reason, I just said, "Oh, okay, I'll be there." And you know, the next night, I drank a 40-ouncer with the busboy at work with whom I was having an affair, even though I was living with my boyfriend, and I went to rehab the next day. And I remember stopping for lunch on the way to rehab, and my boyfriend at the time asking me if I wanted to have a glass of wine, and I said, "No, I'm, you know, what's the point? I'm going to get sober. I was done." And I hear people talk about, "I'm done, I'm done, I was done, I was done." And I know I'm done. I absolutely know I'm done. And I know today that if I stop going to meetings and stop calling my sponsor and stop working, you know, doing a 10 step every night and stop working with others, I know that I could be undone within a short period of time. So I'm only done as long as I keep doing Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that deep to my core at 29 years of sobriety because I am reminded of it because I go to meetings. So I was done, and I'll tell you that I didn't, you know, and rehab was great for me. It was great to be there because I was living in a house where people were, you know, growing weed in the backyard, brewing beer on the stove, and it was a huge party house with a revolving door of tenants. And so I don't know if I could have gotten sober had I not been isolated. And I don't. They didn't really talk to us too much that I remember about staying sober, but what I did hear was that you had to be honest, you couldn't lie anymore, and you had to go to meetings. And so when I so that meant that I couldn't cheat on my boyfriend, and I didn't know how many meetings to go to, but I would go to meetings late and I would leave early. And at 3 years of sobriety, when I moved down to Los Angeles, I didn't really have a design for a living. My life, I met another him, and he was the answer, and he was the one because he was going to throw away his bong for me. And my life fell apart again in sobriety. And I hadn't gone to any meetings for about a month, and I knew that if I didn't get to a meeting, I was going to drink. And so when I say that the problem centers in my mind, my life didn't get better just because I stopped drinking. My life continued on the same trajectory. It was maybe a teeny bit better because I wasn't drinking at the time, but I was more crazy and more crazy and still doing the same thing. And I was crying every day, and I didn't want to work on the 4th of July. So I lost my job again, you know, because I wanted to go to the beach, and, you know, I wanted to be a star. And I was running out of acting class because I got too much criticism and create, you know, it was just like it was the same crap all over again. And I walked into a meeting, a Monday night step study. So I'm just going to check the time. I walked into a Monday night step study because this little voice had told me, if you don't get to a meeting, you're going to drink. And I walked into the step study that was an inconvenient meeting for me to go to because it was a little bit further away than I would have liked. And I walked in barefoot with jeans, cutoff shorts, and a little t-shirt. And somebody asked me if I was new, and I was so insulted because I had 3 years of sobriety. And I was like, I have 3 years. And a woman was sharing, and her name was Suzanne, and she was talking about being okay, even though a lot of bad things were happening. I don't remember what she said. I remember how she presented herself. She was articulate, she was poised, she was well dressed. She talked about how her father-in-law was dying and she really cared about her father-in-law, and she talked about being sick and she wasn't drinking. And for some reason, I got her phone number. And when I told her about my stints in the psychiatric ward, she said, "A woman after my own heart, I have been in the psychiatric ward and I have cut myself." And nobody had ever told me that before. I had never, people were always, suggesting that I do things like make my bed, like, do whatever, make my bed, go to school. They'd always been making suggestions to me, strong suggestions, and then asking me what my problem was and why wasn't I doing these things. And even in AA, like I remember going, to meetings, and somebody, it was actually NA, but somebody had told me, like, turn their nose at me, like, why can't you just stay sober? And I was so ashamed because I couldn't just stay sober. I didn't know how to just stay sober. And she told me her problems and what her solution was. And I trusted her because she was no longer participating in these same problems anymore. And she knew what I was going through. And she told me that if I changed my actions, my feelings would change. Thank you. 3 minutes, right? So she told me that if I changed my actions, my feelings would change and I would stop feeling like dying. And so all of those actions consisted of what I still do today, regular meetings on regular meeting days. I had to do a lot of things that were inconvenient to me. I had to drive. She was living in Chatsworth at the time. I was living in West Hollywood. I had to drive to her house to do step work. I had to call her every day, whether I had something to say or not. And all of those things over time, I started to feel better. She had me do an inventory. I was in so much pain. She had me do an inventory, like a mini inventory right away. And she had me see that I was not a victim in my life. I had a part in all of these things that were going on. And if I could just take care of my part, I might feel a little bit better. And a lot of people are scared of the fourth step. I found tremendous relief from doing my fourth step and reading it to my sponsor because I saw that my happiness and my life was not based on anybody else. That if it was everybody else's fault, I was totally screwed. But it wasn't everybody else's fault. And even if I had 0.0001, percent that I could change, I could feel better because I was wanted to die in sobriety, and I was 6 years sober before I stopped feeling like killing myself all the time. It got better over time, but I remember at 6 years sober, all of a sudden I was, driving over the hill to my regular meeting and looking up at the sky, and all of a sudden realizing at that moment that I didn't want to kill myself anymore. And I didn't know when that had happened. I just knew that I kept taking all of these things that were really inconvenient. Some of the things she had me do was like call two people a day and see how they were doing and not talk about myself because she would always tell me, the problem is you're self-obsessed. The problem is you're self-obsessed. So now I have these tools. And because of those solutions that I was given, that helps me in my job today. I have to talk to people that I don't know and see how they're doing. And, I think my time is going to be up in here just a second, but I told you at the very beginning kind of what my life is like too, and today. So I think I'll just wrap it up by saying that I'm a free woman today. Like, I know how not to go to the psychiatric ward. I know how not to pull my life down around my ears. And boy, within the last few days, I've had to pause. Like, somebody made me so mad, and I was so glad that I could pause and not cause a scene, because, you know, generally the problem is not the problem. The problem is my reaction to the problem. And as long as I stay here with you, then I can, you know, I have some sort of pause and I can stay sober long enough to find the solution. So thanks for letting me share.